John. He was not a tall man, Tormund Giantsbane, but the guards had given him a broad chest and massive belly. Mance Raider had named him Tormund Hallblower for the power of his lungs, and was wont to say that Tormund's chuckle could laugh the snow off mountaintops. In his wrath, his bellows reminded John of a mammoth trumpeting. That day, Tormund bellowed often and loudly. He roared, he shouted, he slammed his fist against the table so hard that a flagon of water overturned and spilled. A horn of mead was never far from his hand, so the spittle he sprayed when making threats was sweet with honey. He called Jon Snow a craven, a liar, and a turncloak, cursed him for a black-hearted, buggering kneeler, a robber and a carrion crow, accused him of wanting to fuck the free folk up the arse. Twice he flung his drinking horn at John's head, though only after he had emptied it. Tormund was not the sort of man to waste good mead. John let it all wash over him. He never raised his own voice or answered threat with threat, but neither did he give more ground than he had come prepared to give. Finally, as the shadows of the afternoon grew long outside the tent, Tormund Giantsbane, tall talker, hornblower, and breaker of ice, Tormund Thunderfist, husband to bears, mead king of Ruddy Hall, speaker to guards and father of hosts, thrust out his hand. "Done then, and may the gods forgive me. There's 100 mothers never will, I know." John clasped the offered hand. The words of his oath rang through his head. "I am the sword in the darkness. I am the watcher on the walls. I am the fire that burns against the cold, the light that brings the dawn, the horn that wakes the sleepers, the shield that guards the realms of men." And for him a new refrain. "I am the guard who opened the gates and let the foe march through." He would have given much and more to know that he was doing the right thing. But he had gone too far to turn back. "Done and done," he said. Tormund's grip was bone-crushing. That much had not changed about him. The beard was the same as well, though the face under that thicket of white hair had thinned considerably, and there were deep lines graven in those ruddy cheeks. "Matt should have killed you when he had the chance," he said, as he did his best to turn John's hand to pulp and bone. "Go for gruel and boys, a cruel price. Whatever happened to that sweet lad I knew?" "They made him Lord Commander. A fair bargain leaves both sides unhappy, I've heard it said. 3 days? If I live that long, some of me own will spit on me when they hear these terms." Tormund released John's hand. "Your crows will grumble too, if I know them. And I ought to. I've killed more of your black buggers than I can count." "It might be best if you did not mention that so loudly when you come south of the wall." "Ha ha!" Tormund laughed. That had not changed either. He still laughed easily and often. "Wise words. I not want you crows to peck me to death." He slapped John's back. "When all my folk are safe behind your wall, we'll share a bit of meat and mead. Till then?" The wildling pulled off the band from his left arm and tossed it at John, then did the same with its twin upon his right. "Your first payment. Had those from my father and him from his. Now they're yours, you thieving black bastard." The armbands were old gold, solid and heavy, engraved with the ancient runes of the first men. Tormund Giantsbane had worn them as long as John had known him. They had seemed as much a part of him as his beard. "The Bravassi will melt these down for the gold. That seems a shame. Perhaps you ought to keep them." "No, I'll not have it said that Tormund Thunderfist made the free folk give up their treasures whilst he kept his own." He grinned. "But I'll keep the ring I wear about my member, much bigger than those little things. On you, it'd be a talk. John had to laugh. You never change.
Oh, I do.
The grin melted away like snow in summer. I am not the man I was at Roddy Hall. Seen too much death, and worse things too. My sons. Grief twisted Torment's face. Dormant was cut down in the battle for the wall, and him still half a boy. One of your king's knights did for him, some bastard all in grey steel with moss upon his shield. I saw the cut, but my boy was dead before I reached him. And Torwind, it was the cold claimed him, always sickly, that one. He just up and died one night. The worst of it, before we ever knew, he'd died. He rose pale with them blue eyes. Had to see to him myself. That was hard, John. Tears shone in his eyes. He wasn't much of a man, truth be told, but he'd been my little boy once, and I loved him. John put a hand on his shoulder. I'm so sorry. Why, weren't your doing? There's blood on Yan's eye, same as mine, but not his. Torment shook his head. I still have two strong sons. Your daughter? Munda. That brought Torment's smile back. Took that long spare Reich to husband, if you believe it. Boy's got more cock than sense, he asked me. But he treats her well enough. I told him, if he ever hurt her, I'd yank his member off and beat him bloody with it. He gave John another hearty slap. Time you were going back. Keep you any longer, they'll like to think we ate you. Dawn, then. 3 days from now. The boys first. I heard you the first 10 times, Crow. A man would think there was no trust between us. He spat. Boys first, aye. Mammoths go the long way round. You make sure Eastwatch expects them. I'll make sure there's no fighting, no rushing at your bloody gate. Nice and orderly will be, ducklings in a row. And me, the mother duck. Torment led John from his tent.
Outside, the day was bright and cloudless. The sun had returned to the sky after a fortnight's absence, and to the south the wall rose blue-white and glittering. There was a saying John had heard from the older men at Castle Black. The wall has more moods than Mad King Aerys, they'd say. Or sometimes, the wall has more moods than a woman. On cloudy days, it looked to be white rock. On moonless nights, it was as black as coal. In snowstorms, it seemed carved of snow. But on days like this, there was no mistaking it for anything but ice. On days like this, the wall shimmered bright as a septon's crystal, every crack and crevasse limned by sunlight, as frozen rainbows danced and died behind translucent ripples. On days like this, the wall was beautiful. Torman's elder son stood near the horses, talking with Leathers. Tall Tareg, he was called amongst the free folk. Though he barely had an inch on Leathers, he overtopped his father by a foot. Harith, the strapping Molestown boy, called Horse, huddled near the fire, his back to the other two. He and Leathers were the only men John had brought with him to the parley. Any more might have been seen as a sign of fear, and 20 men would have been of no more use than 2, if Torman had been intent on blood. Ghost was the only protection John needed. The direwolf could sniff out foes, even those who hid their enmity behind smiles. Ghost was gone, though. John peeled off one black glove, put 2 fingers in his mouth, and whistled. Ghost! To me! From above came the sudden sound of wings. Mormont's raven flapped from a limb of an old oak to perch upon John's saddle.
Corn! It cried. Corn! Corn! Corn!
Did you follow me as well? John reached to shoo the bird away, but ended up stroking its feathers. The raven cocked its eye at him.
Snow!
It muttered, bobbing its head knowingly. Then Ghost emerged from between two trees, with Val beside him. They look as though they belong together. Val was clad all in white, white woolen breeches tucked into high boots of bleached white leather, white bearskin cloak pinned at the shoulder with a carved weirwood face, white tunic with bone fastenings. Her breath was white as well, but her eyes were blue, her long braid the colour of dark honey, her cheeks flushed red from the cold. It had been a long while since Jon Snow had seen a sight so lovely. "Have you been trying to steal my wolf?" he asked her.
"Why not? If every woman had a dire wolf, men would be much sweeter, even crows."
"Ha!" laughed Tormund Giantsbane. "Don't bandy words with this one, Lord Snow. She's too clever for the likes of you and me. Best steal her quick, before Torrig wakes up and takes her first."
What had that oaf Axel Florence said of Val? "A nubile girl, not hard to look upon. Good hips, good breasts, well made for whelping children." All true enough, but the wildling woman was so much more. She had proved that by finding Tormund, where seasoned rangers of the Watch had failed. She may not be a princess, but she would make a worthy wife for any lord. But that bridge had been burned a long time ago, and John himself had thrown the torch. "Torag is welcome to her," he announced. "I took a vow."
"She won't mind, hey, will you, girl?"
Val patted the long bone knife on her hip.
"Lord Crow is welcome to steal into my bed any night he dares. Once he's been gelded, keeping those vows will come much easier for him."
"Ha!" Tormund snorted again. "You hear that, Torag? Stay away from this one. I have one daughter, don't need another." Shaking his head, the wildling chief ducked back inside his tent. As John scratched Ghost behind the ear, Torag brought up Val's horse for her. She still rode the grey Garan that Molly had given her the day she left the wall, a shaggy, stunted thing, blind in one eye. As she turned it toward the wall, she asked,
"How fares the little monster?"
"Twice as big as when you left us, and thrice as loud. When he wants the teat, you can hear him wail in Eastwatch." John mounted his own horse. Val fell in beside him.
"So, I brought you Tormund, as I said I would. What now? Am I to be returned to my old cell?"
"Your old cell is occupied. Queen Selyse has claimed the King's Tower for her own. Do you remember Harden's Tower?
The one that looks about to collapse?"
"It's looked that way for 100 years. I've had the top floor made ready for you, my lady. You will have more room than in the King's Tower, though you may not be as comfortable. No one has ever called it Harden's Palace."
"I would choose freedom over comfort every time."
"Freedom of the castle you shall have, but I regret to say you must remain a captive. I can promise you that you will not be troubled by unwanted visitors, however. My own men guard Harden's Tower, not the Queen's, and one sleeps in the entry hall."
"A giant as protector? Even Dala could not boast of that."
Tormund's wildlings watched them pass, peering out from tents and lean-tos beneath leafless trees. For every man of fighting age, John saw 3 women and as many children, gaunt-faced things with hollow cheeks and staring eyes. When Mence Raider had led the free folk down upon the wall, his followers drove large herds of sheep and goats and swine before them. But now the only animals to be seen were the mammoths. If not for the ferocity of the giants, those would have been slaughtered too, he did not doubt. There was a lot of meat on a mammoth's bones. John saw signs of sickness too. That disquieted him more than he could say. If Tormund's band were starved and sick, what of the thousands who had followed Mother Mole to a hard home? Cutter Pike should reach them soon. If the winds were kind, his fleet might well be on its way back to Eastwatch even now, with as many of the free folk as he could cram aboard.
"How did you fare with Tormund, asked Val. Ask me a year from now. The hard part still awaits me. The part where I convince mine own to eat this meal I've cooked for them. None of them are going to like the taste, I fear.
Let me help.
You have. You brought me Tormund.
I can do more.
Why not? Thought John. They're all convinced she is a princess. Val looked the part and rode as if she had been born on horseback. A warrior princess, he decided, not some willowy creature who sits up in a tower, brushing her hair and waiting for some knight to rescue her. I must inform the queen of this agreement, he said. You're welcome to come meet her, if you can find it in yourself to bend a knee. It would never do to offend her grace before he even opened his mouth.
May I laugh when I kneel?
You may not. This is no game. A river of blood runs between our peoples, old and deep and red. Stannis Baratheon is one of the few who favours admitting wildlings to the realm. I need his queen's support for what I've done. Val's playful smile died.
You have my word, Lord Snow. I will be a proper wildling princess for your queen.
She is not my queen, he might have said. If truth be told, the day of her departure cannot come too fast for me, and if the gods are good, she would take Melisandre with her. They rode the rest of the way in silence, ghosts loping at their heels. Mormont's raven followed them as far as the gate, then flapped upward as the rest of them dismounted. Horse went ahead, with a brand to light the way through the icy tunnel. A small crowd of black brothers was waiting by the gate when John and his companions emerged south of the wall. Olmer of the King's Wood was amongst them, and it was the old archer who came forward to speak for the rest.
If it please, my lord, the lads were wondering, will it be peace, my lord, or blood and iron?
Peace, John Snow replied. 3 days hence, Tormund Giantsbane will lead his people through the wall. As friends, not foes. Some may even swell our ranks as brothers. It will be for us to make them welcome. Now, back to your duties. John handed the reins of his horse to Satin. I must see Queen Selyse. Her grace would take it as a slight if he did not come to her at once. Afterwards I will have letters to write. Bring parchment quills and a pot of maester's black to my chambers. Then summon Marsh, Yarwick, Septon, Celador, Clydus. Celador would be half drunk, and Clydus was a poor substitute for a real maester, but they were what he had. Till Sam returns. The Northmen, too. Flint and Nurry. Leathers, you should be there as well.
Hub is baking onion pies, said Satin. Shall I request that they all join you for supper?
John considered. No, ask them to join me atop the wall at sunset. He turned to Val. My lady, with me, if you please.
The crow commands, a captive must obey.
Her tone was playful.
This queen of yours must be fierce, if the legs of grown men give out beneath them when they meet her. Should I have dressed in mail instead of wool and fur? These clothes were given me by Dala. I would sooner not get blood stains all over them.
If words drew blood, you might have cause to fear. I think your clothes are safe enough, my lady. They made their way toward the King's Tower, along fresh-shoveled pathways between mounds of dirty snow.
I've heard it said that your queen has a great dark beard.
John knew he should not smile, but he did. Only a moustache, very wispy. You can count the hairs.
How disappointing.
For all her talk about wanting to be mistress of her seat, Selyse Baratheon seemed in no great haste to abandon the comforts of Castle Black for the shadows of the night fort. She kept guards, of course, 4 men posted at the door, 2 outside on the steps, 2 inside by the brazier. Commanding them were Sir Patrick of King's Mountain, clad in his knightly raiment of white and blue and silver, his cloak a spatter of 5-pointed stars. When presented to Val, the knight sank to 1 knee to kiss her glove.
You're even lovelier than I was told, Princess," he declared. "The Queen has told me much and more of your beauty. How odd, when she has never seen me." Val patted Sir Patrick on the head. "Up with you now, Sir Kneeler, up, up." She sounds as if she were talking to a dog. It was all that John could do not to laugh. Stone-faced, he told the knight that they required audience with the Queen. Sir Patrick sent one of the men-at-arms scrambling up the steps to inquire as to whether Her Grace would receive them.
"The wolf stays here, though,"
Sir Patrick insisted. John expected that. The direwolf made Queen Selyse anxious, almost as much as one wig, one dire one. "Ghost, stay." They found Her Grace sewing by the fire, whilst her fool danced about to music only he could hear, the cowbells on his antlers clanging.
"A crow, the crow," Patchface cried when he saw John. "Under the sea, the crows are white as snow. I know, I know. Oh, oh, oh."
Princess Shireen was curled up in a window seat, her hood drawn up to hide the worst of the grayscale that had disfigured her face. There was no sign of Lady Melisandre. For that much, John was grateful. Soon or late, he would need to face the Red Priestess, but he would sooner it was not in the Queen's presence. "Your Grace," he took a knee. Val did likewise. Queen Selyse set aside her sewing.
"You may rise."
"If it please Your Grace, may I present the Lady Val?" Her sister Darla was
mother to that squalling babe who keeps us awake at night. "I know who she is, Lord Snow,"
the Queen sniffed.
"You are fortunate that she returned to us before the King, my husband. Else it might have gone badly for you. Very badly indeed."
"Are you the wildling, Princess?"
Shireen asked Val.
"Some call me that," said Val.
"My sister was wife to Mansurida, the King beyond the wall. She died giving him a son."
"I'm a princess too," Shireen announced. "But I never had a sister. I used to have a cousin once before he sailed away. He was just a bastard, but I liked him."
"Honestly, Shireen," her mother said, "I am sure the Lord Commander did not come to hear about Robert's Biblers. Patchface, be a good fool and take the princess to her room."
The bells on his hat rang.
"Away, away," the fool sang. "Come with me beneath the sea, away, away, away."
He took the little princess by one hand and drew her from the room, skipping. John said, "Your Grace, the leader of the free folk has agreed to my terms." Queen Selyse gave the tiniest of nods.
"It was ever my lord husband's wish to grant sanctuary to these savage peoples. So long as they keep the king's peace and the king's laws, they are welcome in our realm."
She pursed her lips.
"I am told they have more giants with them."
Val answered,
"Almost 200 of them, Your Grace, and more than 80 mammoths."
The Queen shuddered.
"Dreadful creatures."
John could not tell if she was speaking of the mammoths or the giants.
"Though such beasts might be useful to my lord husband in his battles."
"That may be, Your Grace," John said, "but the mammoths are too big to pass through our gate."
"Cannot the gate be widened?"
That would be unwise, I think." Selyse sniffed.
"If you say so. No doubt you know about such things. Where do you mean to settle these wildlings? Surely Millstown is not large enough to contain... How many are there?"
4,000, Your Grace. They will help us garrison our abandoned castles, the better to defend the wall."
"I had been given to understand that those castles were ruins. Dismal places, bleak and cold, hardly more than heaps of rubble. At Eastwatch we heard talk of rats and spiders."
"The cold will have killed us spiders by now," thought John, "and the rats may be a useful source of meat come winter." "All true, Your Grace, but even ruins offer some shelter, and the wall will stand between them and the others."
"I see you have considered
all this carefully, Lord Snow. I'm sure King Stannis will be pleased when he returns triumphant from his battle.
Assuming he returns at all.
Of course, the Queen went on, the wildlings must first acknowledge Stannis as their king and R'hllor as their god.
And here we are, face to face in the narrow passage. Your Grace, forgive me. Those were not the terms that we agreed to. The Queen's face hardened.
A grievous oversight.
What faint traces of warmth her voice had held vanished all at once. A free folk do not kneel, Val told her.
Then they must be knelt,
the Queen declared.
Do that, Your Grace, and we will rise again at the first chance,
Val promised.
Rise with blades in hand.
The Queen's lips tightened, and her chin gave a small quiver.
You are insolent. I suppose that is only to be expected of a wildling. We must find you a husband who can teach you courtesy.
The Queen turned her glare on John.
I do not approve, Lord Commander, nor will my lord husband. I cannot prevent you from opening your gate, as we both know full well, but I promise you that you shall answer for it when the king returns from battle. Mayhaps you might want to reconsider.
Your Grace, John knelt again. This time Val did not join him. I am sorry my actions have displeased you. I did as I thought best. Do I have your leave to go?
You do. At once.
Once outside and well away from the Queen's men, Val gave vent to her wrath.
You lied about her beard. That one has more hair on her chin than I have between my legs. And the daughter, her face.
Grayscale.
The grey death is what we call it.
It's not always mortal in children.
North of the wall it is. Hemlock is a sure cure, but a pillow or a blade will work as well. If I had given birth to that poor child, I would have given her the gift of mercy long ago.
This was a vow that John had never seen before. Princess Shireen is the Queen's only child.
I pity both of them. The child is not clean.
If Stannis wins his war, Shireen will stand as heir to the Iron Throne.
Then I pity your seven kingdoms.
The maesters say Grayscale is not.
The maesters may believe what they wish. Ask a woods witch if you would know the truth. The Grey Death sleeps, only to wake again. The child is not clean.
She seems a sweet girl. You cannot know.
I can. You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Val seized his arm.
I want the monster out of there. Him and his wet nurses. You cannot leave them in that same tower as the dead girl.
John shook her hand away.
She is not dead. She is. Her mother cannot see it. Nor you, it seems. Yet death is there.
She walked away from him, stopped, turned back.
I brought you Tormund Giantsbane. Bring me my monster.
If I can, I will.
Do. You owe me a debt, Jon Snow.
John watched her stride away. She is wrong. She must be wrong. Grayscale is not so deadly, she claims, not in children. Ghost was gone again. The sun was low in the west. A cup of hot spiced wine would serve me well just now. Two cups would serve me even better. But that would have to wait. He had foes to face. Foes of the worst sort. Brothers. He found Leathers waiting for him by the winch cage. The two of them rode up together. The higher they went, the stronger the wind. 50 feet up, the heavy cage began to sway with every gust. From time to time, it scraped against the wall, starting small, crystalline showers of ice that sparkled in the sunlight as they fell. They rose above the tallest towers of the castle. At 400 feet, the wind had teeth, and Tor had his black cloak, so it slapped noisily at the iron bars. At 700, it cut right through him. The wall is mine,
John reminded himself as the winchmen were swinging in the cage. For 2 more days at least. John hopped down onto the ice, thanked the men on the winch, and nodded to the spearmen standing sentry. Both wore woolen hoods, pulled down over their heads, so nothing could be seen of their faces but their eyes. But he knew Ty by the tangled rope of greasy black hair falling down his back, and Owen by the sausage stuffed into the scabbard at his hip. He might have known them anyway, just by the way they stood. A good lord must know his men. His father had once told him and Rob, back at Winterfell. John walked to the edge of the wall and gazed down upon the killing ground where Mance Raider's host had died. He wondered where Mance was. Did he ever find you, little sister? Or were you just a ploy he used, so I would set him free? It had been so long since he had last seen Arya. What would she look like now? Would he ever know her? Arya underfoot. Her face was always dirty. Would she still have that little sword he'd had Mickin forge for her? Stick them with a pointy end, he'd told her. Wisdom for her wedding night, if half of what he heard of Ramsay Snow was true. Bring her home, Mance. I saved your son from Melisandre, and now I'm about to save 4,000 of your free folk. You owe me this one little girl. In the haunted forest to the north, the shadows of the afternoon crept through the trees. The western sky was a blaze of red, but to the east the first stars were peeking out. Jon Snow flexed the fingers of his sword hand, remembering all he'd lost. Sam, you sweet fat fool, you played me a cruel jape when you made me Lord Commander. A Lord Commander has no friends. Lord Snow, said Leathers, the cage is coming up. I hear it. John moved back from the edge. First to make the ascent were the clan chiefs, Flint and Norrie, clad in fur and iron. The Norrie looked like some old fox, wrinkled and slight of build, but sly-eyed and spry. Torgon Flint was half a head shorter, but must have weighed twice as much. A stout, gruff man with gnarled, red-knuckled hands as big as hams, leaning heavily on a blackthorn cane as he limped across the ice. Bowen Marsh came next, bundled up in a bearskin. After him, Athel Yarwick, then Septon Celador, half in his cups. Walk with me, John told them. They walked west along the wall, down gravel-strewn paths toward the setting sun. When they had come 50 yards from the warming shed, he said, "You know why I've summoned you? 3 days hence at dawn, the gate will open to allow Tormund and his people through the wall. There is much we need to do in preparation." Silence greeted his pronouncement. Then Athel Yarwick said, "Lord Commander, there are thousands of scrawny wildlings, bone-weary, hungry, far from home." John pointed the lights of their campfires. "There they are. 4,000, Tormund claims.
3,000, I make them by the fires."
Bowen Marsh lived for counts and measures.
"More than twice that number at Hardhome, with the Woods Witch, we are told. And Sir Dennis writes of great camps in the mountains beyond the Shadow Tower."
John did not deny it. "Tormund says the Weeper means to try the Bridge of Skulls again." The old pomegranate touched his scar. He had gotten it defending the Bridge of Skulls the last time the Weeping Man had tried to cut his way across the gorge.
"Surely the Lord Commander cannot mean to allow that demon through as well."
Not gladly. John had not forgotten the heads the Weeping Man had left him, with bloody holes where their eyes had been. Black Jack Bulwer, Hairy Hal, Garth Greyfeather. I cannot avenge them, but I will not forget their names. "But yes, my lord, him as well. We cannot pick and choose amongst the free folk, saying this one may pass, this one may not. Peace means peace for all. The Nare hawked and spat.
As well make peace with wolves and carrion crows. It's peaceful in my dungeons, grumbled old Flint. Give the weeping man to me.
How many rangers has the weeper killed? Asked Othel Yarwick. How many women has he raped or killed or stolen?
Three of mine own ilk, said old Flint, and he blinds the girls he does not take.
When a man takes the black, his crimes are forgiven, John reminded them. If we want the free folk to fight beside us, we must pardon their past crimes as we would for our own.
The weeper will not say the words, insisted Yarwick. He will not wear the cloak. Even other raiders do not trust him.
You need not trust a man to use him. Else how could I make use of all of you? We need the weeper and others like him. Who knows the wild better than a wildling? Who knows our foes better than a man who has fought them?
All the weeper knows is rape and murder, said Yarwick.
Once past the wall, the wildlings will have thrice our numbers, said Bowen Marsh. And that is only Tormund's band. Add the weeper's men and those at Hardhome, and they will have the strength to end the night's watch in a single night.
Numbers alone do not win a war. You have not seen them. Half them are dead on their feet. I would sooner have them dead in the ground, said Yarwick. If it please, my lord. It does not please me. John's voice was as cold as the wind snapping at their cloaks. There are children in that camp, hundreds of them, thousands. Women as well. Spear wives, some, along with mothers and grandmothers, widows and maids. Would you condemn them all to die, my lord?
A brother should not squabble, Septon Celador said. Let us kneel and pray to the crone to light our way to wisdom.
Lord Snow, said the Norrie, where do you mean to put these wildlings of yours? Not in my lands, I hope.
Aye, declared old Flint. You want them in their gift? That's your folly. But see they don't wander off, or I'll send you back their heads. Winter is nigh. I want no more mouths to feed.
The wildlings will remain upon the wall, John assured them. Most will be housed in one of our abandoned castles. The watch now had garrisons at Icemark, Longbarrow, Sable Hall, Greyguard, and Deep Lake, all badly undermanned, but 10 castles still stood empty and abandoned. Men with wives and children, all orphan girls and any orphan boys below the age of 10, old women, widowed mothers, any woman who does not care to fight. The spear wives were sent to Longbarrow to join their sisters. Single men to the other forts we've reopened. Those who take the black will remain here, or be posted to Eastwatch or the Shadow Tower. Tormund will take Oakenshield as his seat, to keep him close at hand. Bowen Marsh sighed.
If they do not slay us with their swords, they will do so with their mouths. Pray, how does the Lord Commander propose to feed Tormund and his thousands?
John had anticipated that question. Through Eastwatch, we will bring in food by ship, as much as might be required, from the Riverlands and the Stormlands and the Vale of Erin, from Dorne and the Reach, across the narrow sea from the free cities.
And this food will be paid for how, if I may ask?
With gold from the Iron Bank of Braavos, John might have replied. Instead, he said, I have agreed that the free folk may keep their furs and pelts. They will need those for warmth when winter comes. All other wealth they must surrender. Gold and silver, amber, gemstones, carvings, anything of value. We will ship it all across the narrow sea to be sold in the free cities.
All the wealth of the wildlings, said the Norrie. That should buy you a bushel of barleycorn. 2 bushels, might be.
Lord Commander, why not demand that the wildlings give up their arms as well?
Asked Clytus.
Leathers laughed at that.
You want the free folk
to fight beside you against the common foe. How are we to do that without arms? Would you have us throw snowballs at the whites? Or will you give us sticks to hit them with?
The arms most wildlings carry are little more than sticks, thought John. Wooden clubs, stone axes, mauls, spears with fire-hardened points, knives of bone and stone and dragon glass, wicker shields, bone armor, boiled leather. The Thens worked bronze, and raiders, like the Weeper, carried stolen steel and iron swords looted off some corpse. But even those were oft of ancient vintage, dinted from years of hard use and spotted with rust. Tormund Giantsbane will never willingly disarm his people, John said. He is not the weeping man, but he is no craven either. If I had asked that of him, it would have come to blood. The Nari fingered his beard.
You may put your wildlings in these ruined ports, Lord Snow, but how will you make them stay? What is there to stop them moving south to fairer, warmer lands?
Our lands, said old Flint.
Tormund has given me his oath. He will serve with us until the spring. The Weeper and their other captains will swear the same, or we will not let them pass. Old Flint shook his head.
They will betray us.
The Weeper's word is worthless, said Othel Yarwick.
These are godless savages, said Septon Celador. Even in the south, the treachery of wildlings is renowned.
Leathers crossed his arms across his chest.
That battle below. I was on t'other side, remember? Now I'll wear your blacks and train your boys to kill. Some might call me turncoat. Might be so. But I'm no more savage than you crows. We have guards too. The same guards they keep in Winterfell.
The guards of the north, since before this wall was raised, said John. Those are the guards that Tormund swore by. He will keep his word. I know him, as I know Mance Rayder. I marched with them for a time, you may recall.
I had not forgotten, said the Lord Steward.
No, thought John, I did not think you had.
Mance Rayder swore an oath as well, Marsh went on. He vowed to wear no crowns, take no wife, father no sons. Then he turned his cloak, did all those things, and led a fearsome host against the realm. It is the remnants of that host that waits beyond the wall.
Broken remnants.
A broken sword can be reforged. A broken sword can kill.
The free folk have neither laws nor lords, John said, but they love their children. Will you admit that much?
It is not their children who concern us. We fear the fathers, not the sons.
As do I. So I insisted upon hostages. I'm not the trusting fool you take me for, nor am I half wildly, no matter what you believe. 100 boys between the ages of 8 and 16. A son from each of their chiefs and captains. The rest chosen by lot. The boys will serve as pages and squires, freeing our own men for other duties. Some may choose to take the black one day. Queerer things have happened. The rest will stand hostage for the loyalty of their sires. The Northmen glanced at one another.
Hostages, mused the Norrie. Tormund has agreed to this.
It was that, or watch his people die. My blood price, he called it, said John Snow. But he will pay.
Aye, and why not?
Old Flint stumped his cane against the ice.
Wargs, we always called them, when Winterfell demanded boys of us. But they were hostages, and none the worse for it. None but them whose sires displeased the kings of Winter, said the Norrie. Those came home shorter by a head. So you tell me, boy, if these wildling friends of yours prove false, do ye have the belly to do what needs to be done?
Asked Janus Slint. Tormund Giantsbane knows better than to try me. I may seem a green boy in your eyes, Lord Norrie, but I am still a son of Eddard Stark." Yet even that did not appease his Lord Steward.
"You say these boys will serve as squires. Surely the Lord Commander does not mean they will be trained at arms?"
John's anger flared. "No, my lord, I mean to set them to sewing lacy small clothes. Of course they shall be trained at arms. They shall also churn butter, hew firewood, muck stables, empty chamber pots, and run messages, and in between they will be drilled with spear and sword and longbow." Marsh flushed a deeper shade of red.
"The Lord Commander must pardon my bluntness, but I have no softer way to say this. What you propose is nothing less than treason. For 8,000 years, the men of the Night's Watch have stood upon the wall and fought these wildlings. Now you mean to let them pass, to shelter them in our castles, to feed them and clothe them, and teach them how to fight. Lord Snow, must I remind you, you swore an oath."
"I know what I swore." John said the words. "I am the sword in the darkness. I am the watcher on the walls. I am the fire that burns against the cold, the light that brings the dawn, the horn that wakes the sleepers, the shield that guards the realms of men." "Were those the same words you said when you took your vows?"
"They were, as the Lord Commander knows."
"Are you certain that I have not forgotten some? The ones about the king and his laws, and how we must defend every foot of his land and cling to each ruined castle? How does that part go?" John waited for an answer. None came. "I am the shield that guards the realms of men." "Those are the words. So tell me, my lord, what are these wildlings, if not men?" Bowen Marsh opened his mouth. No words came out. A flush crept up his neck. Jon Snow turned away. The last light of the sun had begun to fade. He watched the cracks along the wall go from red to grey to black, from streaks of fire to rivers of black ice. Down below, Lady Melisandre would be lighting her night fire and chanting,
"Lord of light, defend us, for the night is dark and full of terrors."
"Winter is coming," John said at last, breaking the awkward silence. "And with it, the White Walkers. The wall is where we stop them. The wall was made to stop them. But the wall must be manned. This discussion is at an end. We have much to do before the gate is opened. Tormund and his people will need to be fed and clothed and housed. Some are sick and will need nursing." "Those will fall to you, Clytus. Save as many as you can." Clytus blinked his dim pink eyes.
"I will do my best, John. My lord, I mean."
"We will need every cart and wagon made ready to transport the free folk to their new homes. Athel, you shall see to that." Jarvik grimaced. "Aye, Lord Commander. Lord Bowen, you shall collect the tolls. The gold and silver, the amber, the torques and armbands and necklaces. Sort it all, count it. See that it reaches Eastwatch safely."
"Yes, Lord Snow," said Bowen Marsh.
And John thought, "Ice," she said, "and daggers in the dark. Blood frozen red and hard and naked steel." His sword hand flexed. The wind was rising.